हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे.
Okay, Sutra 2.2.31. Moreover, an impression, vasana, is a particular mental formation. It cannot exist without a permanent basis. That is explained in the next sutra. Kshanika tvach cha. Kshanika tvat, because of momentariness, cha, and. In your theory, there can be no permanent basis of the impressions, since everything is momentary. Because nothing really exists in their mind, so how can you get an impression? Because the impression has to be based on something that actually is there. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, then, if it's not there, then how do you have... how do you maintain that impression? Right? Because then that impression being maintained, then you're able to act in everything. Just like, let's say... You know, you saw a dog, you know, when you were a little kid, and it barked at you, so you don't like dogs. Then 50 years later, then you bump into a dog, yes. Right? And it's barking. So that impression is still there, yes. Right? So the principle of dog still exists, right? So, no? Yeah, so you can't have... Things are temporary and keep moving on, but the principles remain. Yes.
So where the false impressions come from?
Means
like how, the body and like that.
Because the body's there. But the point being is that these impressions are based on something that actually exists. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point. What they're saying is that no, that it's everything that you see is coming from your own impressions. Your own mind. You're creating all this. Right? You know, so to get rid of all this, they say that we've created all this. You know, how that works, I'm not sure. You know, like you can't make it in the fashion industry, so in your mind, you've created the fashion industry. And in this, you know, it's like, what is this, how does this work? You know? In a sense. You know, it's just like you can't make it in the economic world, so you're the basis of economics. It's a weird philosophy. You know, they like it, but yeah, makes them feel good.
Right. Vasana and samskara are the same?
Basically, it's an impression. It's the same. It just means samskara will be, you know, we have all the aspects to it. Vasana just means that impression in the mind. But samskara will, you generally think of it as the whole thing, how you're going to act, how you're going to deal and all that. It's based on the vasana.
Okay.
And it's the same thing. Yes. You know, it's just that you could say a synonym of the same thing.
Okay.
Yes. You know. Yes.
I think vasana is always applied in a negative sense.
In a?
Negative sense.
Negative, okay. And samskara can be, so you can have good samskaras.
Yes.
But vasanas are always bad.
Vasana is always applied in a negative sense for material.
Oh, you mean it's only in material?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you want to apply it to spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
actually,
so that difference.
Vasana is equated with lust in the normal.
With lust.
Oh,
okay.
So
yeah, so then material.
Okay.
So it's not that it means. So you can have a pious vasana, but it's still material.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, it's based on material desire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we can have a spiritual samskara.
Yes, you know, it's just like you meet the devotees the first time. It'll create an impression, but it's spiritual. Sutra Prakashika. Finally, the sutrakar employs the Yogacara Buddhist theory of momentariness. against their theory of impressions to defeat them, right? So it's just one of their theories against another of their theories. Rather than just fight the theory each head on, you just take one of their theories and hit it with the other. It's like going up to the guy and taking their own arm and slapping him in their face with their own hand. You know, it's kind of... yeah.
Krishna is doing this with some demons.
Yes.
He would kill them with... like with Guru Vyapida.
Oh, yes, yes. yeah. That's also just one of the ways to do it. Remember what? One person was, someone was really making trouble and all that, and they brought him in, and they were just chastising him. But they stood him just a little bit away from the wall. Like that. You know? Like that. And then they'd walk around and, you know, making all the points that they've done wrong, and now and again they would raise their hand suddenly, you know, next to them, and the guy would go back and hit his head on the wall. But he never touched it. Yeah, so it's the same kind of... Yeah. Impressions are mental formations which are based on the presence of a conscious entity able to perform an action. Right? Because the vasana is going to be implied in practical. That's the whole thing, is that information's coming in now.
Yes.
And that is forming an impression, but you have to base that on previous. Yes. Right? So it doesn't get fully formed until you look at the memory, you analyze it, and then according to your position, you choose what to do. Yes. Right? And then having applied that, now that creates the new samskara.
Yes.
Or the new impression.
Yes.
Right, so that's why if it's spiritual, then you can change it. And if it's material, then it's just the same old. Right. Yeah. But since everything is momentary, applies the conscious entity is absent, which in turn implies impressions are absent. Sri Govindabhasya, Siddhanta. The word not is carried over from the previous sutra. According to your philosophy, there can be no permanent basis for the impression. Why? Because you claim that everything, including individual and aggregate, alaya, cognition, is momentary, kshani katvat. In the absence of a conscious entity, which is permanent in past, present, future, the actions of recollection, reflection, and impressions, depending on time and place, will not occur. Right? So since these things, recollection, reflection, impressions, are dealing with past, present, future, you're looking at the past, you're seeing what's now, what could be the result in the future, it's based on time. But if you're momentary, there is no time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's the difficulty.
Because for Buddhism, there is no time.
It appears not, but they do worship time, at least the Tibetan Walas. So I'm not sure where they fit into this, which school they're in, like that. But they worship Shiva, Parvati, and time. Not necessarily with those names, but basically Shiva, Maya, and time.
Tibetans are the realist. They're in the realist group.
The first one. Okay, so they say it exists, so they're not the ones saying this. But at the same time, doesn't mean that it doesn't eventually get to that.
Yes.
At the end of the day, they'll all be nothing. Right, you know. Because of a lack of shelter, impressions cannot exist, right? Because you have to have a shelter, the living entity being momentary, where will these impressions take shelter? Because they don't exist. Right? Because there are no impressions, there can be no variety in cognition. Right? So you only get the same thing, or there can't actually be any cognition. You can't see different things.
Yes.
Right? The theory of cognition as the only existence is thus insignificant. Right? It's an unimportant philosophy. It's not like a very solid philosophy. Yes.
We say that because they say there are no impressions, or they are momentary, or both.
They're saying that everything that you see is based on impressions, but at the same time as they're saying everything is momentary, so it doesn't last. So the idea is that it's the cognition that brings it up and it goes away. Right? But the problem is if the if there's no individual conscious entity to be conscious, then how is there a remembrance of something before if everything's momentary? That's the thing. The living entity won't be there to remember what happened before. So, yeah.
They say that impressions are the ones which is doing the creation. However, we refute them saying that because the jiva is absent, how can your impressions be permanent in that sense?
Okay, the jiva makes the creation. Yeah. So if they're temporary, then how is it still here? Because it's only impressions.
Only when the conscious entity is there, then you can have an interaction, and then the impressions will be created in the cognition.
Mm-hmm.
But that is, the jiva himself is missing. So how can the impressions be created in the first place?
Okay.
We refute them, saying that, no, you're saying that from the impressions the things have been created, that's refuted. Because the jiva himself is momentary.
Okay. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.3.29. Your lordship, being the origin of life of this material world, is the master and controller of the living entities, both moving and stationary. And you inspire their consciousness. You maintain the mind and the acting and knowledge-acquiring senses, and therefore you are the great controller of all the material elements and their qualities. And you are the controller of all desires. Right? So understanding the Lord is the actual position, and He's doing all this, then this whole idea that their impressions are going to create it, that's not true. Especially since it's momentary and there's no one there to create the impressions. Right?
Maharaj, so then they have only the aspect of worshipping Mahavir in their temples. That means the Guru, not the Lord himself, because they don't have...
I have no idea. Because Mahavir, as I know, is Jain.
Yeah, but sorry.
Yeah, he's a Jain. Synopsis of Shunyavad Buddhism. So that's the
nihilists.
Okay. With the Yogacara defeated, the Madhyamika, propounding complete voidism, comes forward to argue. So the Madhyamika, these are the Shunyavada, the nihilists.
Yeah, the Madhyamikas are the ones who are proposing the Shunyavada doctrine.
Okay. And then, how does this deal with Terayan, Hinayan, Mahayan? Makes absolutely no sense, Ayan.
Okay.
The Hinayana are the realists.
Well, they call themselves Theravada, but the Mahayana calls them the Hinayana.
Okay, so it's Terayan.
Theravada.
And Mahavad.
Hinayana and Theravada are one and the same.
Hinayana and Theravada.
One and the same. Mahayana is the recent which came, and they have said that this old school has been named as Hinayana. Hinayana means lowly vehicle. And Mahayana means a great vehicle. That is
right. So Mahayana and Hinayana, or Theravada and
Hinayana is an optional name for Theravada.
Yeah, but what's yes, but what's what the other school, the one that the Mahayana, what are they in Vadas?
That I have not done the research.
Because the Theravada. And then there's another name for the other one.
Yeah, I don't know.
No? Okay.
Because there are only two sects which mentioned Hinayana and Mahayana.
Okay, so Mahayana calls the Hinayana Hinayana.
Yeah, they are lowly and they are great sects. How they distinguish each other.
Okay. So that means one's humble and one's a big fool. Okay. With the Yogacara defeated, the Madhyamika, his philosophy is as follows. Accepting external objects and vijnan, cognition, Buddha created the concept of momentariness, etc., as a ladder for raising the intelligence of his disciples. But those disciples did not ascend the path. Voidness is the only truth, and liberation is attaining that. This is the secret teaching. Okay. It is a correct teaching, so this is still them speaking.
Yes, Maharaj.
It is a correct teaching because it is self-proved, since voidness needs no cause for its existence, and its origin needs no explanation, since only existing objects require explanation of cause. But an existing object cannot arise from an existing object, for we do not see a sprout arising unless the seed is destroyed. Okay. Well, okay, so then that rice that you take and then cook it into rice, it doesn't exist, so you don't need to give the Buddhist any. You should just give him non-existence, because from there everything else comes. So when he comes, you just hold out your hand and go like that.
But then other living entities, not coming from seeds, it doesn't apply.
No, it's just they take, it's like any of the philosophies, they just take those examples that work for them and ignore anything else. You know, you generally see like that when you're dealing in a discussion, whatever will support, they'll take that. Even if it doesn't make sense anymore, they'll still stick to it. Even though it's very obvious it makes no sense, it doesn't really support their position. Because they don't really have anything else. You know, it's just, you know, a living entity has an ego, right? And that's the,
I met one of them.
One of these Madhyamikas.
Yes. In our high school, they came. They taught some meditation. Huh? And after the meditation, one of the person is glorifying their leader. For all of our sake, he has given up all thoughts. She made her thoughts zero for the benefit of the whole society. Made no sense to me even.
Yeah, yeah. No thought, you might as well invite it a rock or something.
What are they doing? They are not thinking.
That's the problem. Look at their philosophy. That was the point made earlier, is that they say all these things, but they don't actually follow them. It just sounds good because then, you know, they feel good. They have position. You know, there's authority, there's respect, you know, all these different things. You know, maybe they get the corner room in the monastery, you know, with the two windows, you know, the whole thing. No? They say corporate joke, right? The existing object can also not arise from a non-existing entity, since this would mean the sprout arises from a non-existing seed. An existing object cannot arise on its own, since it is meaningless to say that it produced itself. An existing object cannot arise from some other entity, since then anything could arise from anything, since anything includes all things. Because they're just taking could come from anywhere, you know, like that. So since there is no origination, there is no destruction. Therefore, origination, destruction, existing object and non-existing object all arise from illusion. The only truth is voidness. Okay. Very straight.
They have books.
It'll be one of the misrepresentations of their Adhikarana 5.
It was saying before that actually Buddha created the concept of Amitabha, but his disciples did not ascend the path.
Yes, they did not ascend the path, but then they come along and make something else which is not what Buddha taught.
Yes.
And so then somehow or another they're the better Buddhists, they're the better followers or something like that. So, you know, that's the difficulty.
Like Shankaracharya, he said something, but his disciple also created something else.
Yeah, they just create something else. That's what Prabhupada said. Means reading Shankara's philosophy is one should not do it. But especially one should not read the philosophies created by Shankara's followers.
Yes.
Right? You know, it's just like, what is it? the same principle. Advaitavada is bad. Right? And those attached to it, that's worse. that principle.
Well, yes.
Like that. So that's the whole thing. Material attachment is bad. Someone attached to material attachment is worse.
Yes.
Yes. Does that make sense? So that's the whole how anything works.
Yes.
You know, it's like you can say, let's say money is bad, but someone attached to it, that's worse.
Yes. Yes.
You know, because money could be used in Krishna consciousness, but someone's materially attached, then they won't. So that's worse.
Yes. Because I think since Buddha is incarnation as Krishna, we cannot criticize Buddha.
No. But he has a purpose, because we see is that because of this philosophy, how they've misapplied karma, and they won't leave that interpretation of the Veda, then Buddha has to take them away from the Veda just to get them to become nonviolent. Right? And then, having them become peaceful, then Shankaracharya comes to bring them back to the Veda. But he's bringing them back basically as Buddhists, right? But who are following the Vedic version. Then we see then the Vaishnavacharyas come, then Ramanujacharya comes, and then he converts them from Buddhism back to Vaishnavism. Then the really hard nuts that won't change from impersonalism to Vaishnavism. Then the really hard nuts, then Madhvacharya comes. Like that. And now with that cleared, now Lord Chaitanya comes and then gives the Yuga Dharma. Because if you're having to argue over whether you exist or not, how do we talk about Radha and Krishna and all these things? You already have to establish something on that. You know what I'm saying? Just like we're discussing, like the other day, we're discussing in 11th canto, right? This technical point of it's only bhakti, nothing else really matters. But then if someone is just coming, this is just where they're first coming in, then it's no, but what about all these other things? We do so many nice things, but that's not the discussion. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So you already have to kind of clear all that to be able to present Braja Bhakti. Because
yes.
Right? We only accept that Bhakti is above religious processes. How will we expect Braja Bhakti is above, you know, pure unalloyed devotions above pure devotion?
Yes.
Right? So, yeah, like that. So it takes some time.
Yes. Yes.
You know, so over some thousands of years, then all this is accomplished. Like that. Because it's like... Yeah. Some thousands of years. Buddha was 2,500 years ago?
Yes.
Or 2,500 B.C.? Or 2,500 years ago?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And then, so then, it takes so much time to, you know, adjust the consciousness. Because you have so many people who want to taste that consciousness. So, in this environment within the Kali Yuga, then people want to taste that Buddhism, so then they have to be given their time. And then eventually their time is up, and then, you know, if they still want, they can go to the next universe. So, you know, it's done here.
When they say that the disciples were not able to ascend the path, so whatever philosophy or the doctrine of worldliness that they're proposing, they're saying that is better than whatever Buddha proposed, is something like that.
Yes. Yes. That's why I say it's a secret teaching. Adhikarana 5. Madhyamika or Shunyavad Buddhism refuted. The Madhyam. This is the fourth school.
Shunyavad.
It means that Shunyavad means there's absolute voidism. You know, just like you have Mayavads are absolute oneness. So these are absolute nothingness. They're the fourth variation of the voidous. So, you know, they're all voidous, but these are absolute voidous. Right? You know, so there's nothing. So you see, so one is, the external things are real, but then the problem is you know, but it's our ideas of them that, you know, are the problem. The next one is the ideas are the main thing. Whether things exist externally or not doesn't really matter. They're not saying they don't, but they don't really care if they do. The next group says that it's, you know, what you're having the impressions in your mind, then that's the main thing, and nothing does exist outside. And now these ones go, nothing exists outside or inside.
Yes.
Well, yeah, so it's just getting more.
So no impression.
No, nothing.
One, nothing.
Yeah.
Pure.
So that means they can have no bad impression.
Yes.
So again, you could come up and... yeah. Yes. Sarvata nupa patyadikaranam. Sutra reference 2232. Adhikarana Prashika. Here in this Adhikarana, the Sutrakar aims to refute the Madhyamika doctrine of Shunyavad. According to them, creation, destruction, cause, effect, being, non-being are all unreal. And the only reality is Shunya, or void. Hence, if everything is unreal, then the measures to prove the doctrine of Shunyavad is also unreal. And since nothing is proved, their doctrine thereby remains imperfect. Because there's nothing, so what they're talking is words which don't exist, so that you can't prove non-existence by something that doesn't exist.
Yes.
Right. Samyavadikarna 5. 1. Shamshaya. The doubt. Is it correct or not to say that the only truth is voidness? Purvapaksha. Voidness is correct because it needs no proof, and all objects are non-existent since they are produced from illusion. Siddhanta, Srila Vyasadeva refutes this proposition as follows. Sutta 2232. Sarvatan upapattes cha. Sarvata, in every way, anupapatehe, because of not being proved, cha, and. The voidness doctrine is refuted because it is totally illogical. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar refutes the Shunyavad Buddhist doctrine of voidness. The void theory disproves itself. For if all the means of knowledge and argument are unreal, then there are no means left to establish the void theory. Because they're trying to say, no, but it establishes itself. But by what? There's nothing there to work with. Because to establish means there has to be existence of something, but there's no existence. So it can't exist to prove itself.
Yes.
It's, yeah.
But do they accept the importance of the word?
Word doesn't seem to be. What was before?
The word.
Word, sound. Yeah. They can't, because it's all, everything has to be. Right? Creation, destruction, cause, effect, being, non-being, they're all unreal. So there's absolutely nothing. There just isn't anything.
Yes, yes.
They're pure unalloyed
words. Yes. So these are the worst.
Yes.
Of all. Yeah.
It seems that they shifted from the first one to the second one.
Yes.
I mean, first they said, okay, internal exists, external exists, but internal is the main thing and all.
Yes.
Then we say, but if external is real, then internal depends on external. Okay, then external may or may not exist. No, but even if may or may not exist, still there is a relation. So external doesn't exist, only internal. And if only internal is there without external, then how is it consistent? Okay, internal also doesn't exist.
Yeah. Just keep going. Yeah. So that means you don't exist, so we don't even have to talk, right? Good. Very nice. it's funny. But this is over, you know, seems to be over a long period of time. I'm not sure. It means this had to have been there when Vyasadeva wrote this.
Yes.
You know, I mean, in any case, it doesn't, because this is before they even appear. These are just the principles of philosophy, how they'll go. And they always fall into these categories. By the modes of nature, they'll fall like this. But in the last 2,500 years, when each of these schools kind of came up, that I'm not sure.
But it seems that the sages having different philosophies, they always exist. And
all they're always there. Because Buddha came, you know, right in the beginning. So the philosophy is always there. It's just whether it's manifest or not, you know, whether people are following it or not. You know, somewhere some sage is doing that, but you know, if nothing else, Buddha's there to come along and bewilder. But he's always coming to bewilder atheists. It's not used on theists.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But,
The void theory disproves itself, for if all the means of knowledge and argument are unreal, then there are no means left to establish the void theory. Since the theory remains challenged, therefore the doctrine of voidness is untenable. Sri Govindabhasya. Siddhanta. Okay. The word not is understood. Do you, in speaking of voidness, propose its existence, its non-existence, or its existence non-existence? The non-existence is an existence. Your doctrine cannot be proved at all. Why? Because it is illogical. Anupapattehe. If you admit that voidness is an existing entity, bhavam, then you defeat your sense, since nothing should exist in your doctrine. If you say it is a non-existing entity, abhavam, your doctrine of complete voidness is destroyed due to the fact that you exist as the propounder of the theory, and the logic you use also exists. Right? So then you couldn't be part of this because it doesn't exist. And if it exists, then where's the voidness? Right? If you say that the voidness is both existing and non-existing, it is a self-contradictory statement and therefore useless, because you can't have it both. Yes, the rice that I'm going to give you both exists and doesn't exist.
It exists because since I eat, it is non-existent.
Yes. Yes. Moreover, if the proof by which you conclude voidness is non-existent, the doctrine of voidness is destroyed. Right? It means the proof that they have to prove the non-existence, but then there is no existence, so then their proof also disappears along with it. If the proof exists, then everything exists. Thus, the theory of voidness is defective. Now, would this work in a court of law, coming up and say it's all void, and so therefore then the case comes out of nowhere, you need no precedent? You need no... Yeah, interesting.
The judges, they should be Buddhists themselves.
Yeah, then it might work, yeah. Thus, in teaching three mutually contradictory theories, objects are real, cognition is real, nothing is real, Buddha deluded the world. Right? So all these theories are there, then just these different schools focus on one of them and make it exclusively what they're doing. Right? Right, so yeah. So objects are real, nothing is real, those ones are, you know, obvious. Cognition is real, then you have those where cognition is real, there may or may not be external objects, and the other is cognition is real, there are no. Right, so you have just one that leans a little this way, one's a little that way. Buddha deluded the world. It should be understood that Vyasadeva does not refute Lokayata teachings, Charvak, since they are most unworthy of discussing. Right. Yeah, especially today. Would Charvak make it today? Like borrow or steal the get ghee, you know, then with all the modern, you know, health food freaks and all that, you know. Yeah, Charvak. Beg, borrow, or steal, but get coconut oil. You know? Yeah. No? It wouldn't go down. Yeah. By defeating Buddhist doctrine, the author has also defeated a similar doctrine proclaiming the world is illusion, Mayavad. Right, because it's based on that. They're going to go back to this. This will be the thing. Because you see, as they just try to employ, instead of using void, they use the word Brahman. That's all. It is similar to Buddhism in that it proposes voidness, because it also holds that the creation is mental, drishti srishti, taking shelter of momentariness, and it defines the world as illusion. Footnote 47. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur refutes the Shunyavad theory of the Buddhists claiming the absolute truth to be Shunya, or void. So, in general, they're all Shunyavad, but it's just how Shunya they are. You know, is their cognition? Are there objects? Is there cognition? Or there's nothing? They all say there's nothing, but it's just a matter of that cognition, how much it plays, the external objects, these kind of things. And that's the, okay. Satyam eva tvasan nityam sad eva nitya bhavana kechit varanti mayandha yukti vada para yana. Blinded by illusion, some philosophers devoted to the tricks of logic say, whatever is said to be true will one day be learned to be untrue. You know, including what they just said. Therefore, the only unchanging absolute truth is the statement, there is no absolute truth.
Well, this is the sutra for the modern scientists.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So then why laws, why absolute, why they're worried about it? It's going to change anyway.
They're the cause of the change.
Yeah, oh, they're the cause of it. Oh, yeah. But is it be the change you want to see, right? Okay, yes. Some philosophers express this view. Whatever anyone says to be true is only true temporarily. Therefore, no truth is eternal and absolute. All truth is temporary and relative. What is considered true now will eventually be changed or refuted. At the end, it will be considered untrue. Therefore, truth is always temporary and relative. This idea gives birth to great laughter. For if there is no truth in it at all, right? Only some professional philosophers, blinded by illusions and addicted to the tricks of logic, accept this foolish, illogical idea. Right? It's professional philosophers, because that's their identity. So they have to have something, because then whatever they say can be proven, so later on you can't say that it's not true, because it changes anything. So that's what they said. These philosophers accept the idea that truth is relative, that absolute truth cannot be. In the Bengali language, this idea is expressed by the words noi hoi evam hoi noi. It is not this, it is not that. From this illogical idea, the philosophy of doubts arise. In the English language, this philosophy is called skepticism. Hume and other philosophers preached this idea. So where's Hume from?
He's either English or Scottish.
Okay, but he's not German. Otherwise they'd say the E, right?
David Hume from England.
Hmm?
David Hume from England.
England, okay. Hume and other philosophers preached this idea. Although this skepticism, or the philosophy of doubts, is unnatural and untenable, it has somehow been accepted by many philosophers. The philosophy of material pleasures and the philosophy of cessation of existence, nirvana, brought great harm to their followers. And therefore the people in general became filled with horror merely to hear the names of these philosophers.
The philosophy of Hume and others, this is what, nirvana?
This is skepticism.
Means everything is bad?
No, it means that there is no truth. Whatever today we say is truth, tomorrow won't be, and whatever tomorrow we say, it will be, and this and that. So the only absolute statement is there's no absolute statement. But then if there's no absolute statement, then that statement that they said that's absolute is actually not an absolute statement, because that'll be proved wrong.
So this connected to this non-existent existence?
It means there is some connection, because then basically comes down to there is nothing. So this is just the
derivation?
Yeah, a derivation.
Because skeptics like, it may not be.
Yeah, so it takes on all that, even the Jain kind of thing, all that. So basically what you'll see is anything that comes up in the modern thought,
yes,
you know, outside the Vedic purview, will always be a derivation of these, but they don't know the connection. You know, it's just they're a Buddhist in their last life and not pious enough to maintain that. So now they're born, you know, still in human form, but they still have that philosophy. But you don't have a context. Right? Because in the Orient, then you always have this concept of soul and this and that. There's some supreme, all these aspects. But when you come outside of that, then they don't know what's the soul. They have no idea all this mechanics of that. And so then they just come up with something that makes sense. And when they say it, others, you know, respond. And that's good enough. Because if you say that, you know, this point, then everyone will go, oh, yeah, okay. You know? Yes.
When we were in high school, first time our teacher said this, all the children were so happy. Then why we need to study your class? Let's close our books. Even a child can get the flaw.
Yeah. They should have just all gotten up and left the room.
We didn't study this at school.
No. Because the difference here is that there's nothing, but then the other is that in the beginning there's the word, so then you have some reality.
But in Western Europe, this presentation is quite attractive.
Yeah, because it just makes it, you can just speculate.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You can just speculate.
And Maharaj, we are forced to learn their speculation.
Yeah, that's the thing, because they think it's a value. Yeah, because if you have, what do you call it? Comparative religion, comparative philosophy, it'll be, you have to learn what they think is important.
Right.
Human nature is originally pure. It wears the ornament of devotional service to God. By following the philosophies of materialism, human beings do not find happiness. In this way, the philosophy of materialism grabbed logic, shackled its hands and feet with hard iron bands, and threw it into a dark prison cell. In order to, because that's the point, materialism, you can't use logic, actually, because then it makes no sense, so. In order to cut its own shackles, logic thus created skepticism, or the philosophy of doubts. The materialist philosopher holds that matter is eternal, and matter is all that exists. Professor Huxley preached this idea, and since then it has come from many other mouths also. These people say, without speaking of material causes and effects, no true description of effects can be spoken. Because it just means everything has to come from matter. There's only matter, it has to come from matter, and that's all. No conclusion may be drawn that are not based on material causes and effects. Like they've already established in their establishing their absolute truth that there is no absolute truth beyond materialism. But how has that been accepted as the premise? Right? So that's their philosophy, that's their religion. Like that. But they're trying to present it. No, it's just obvious truth. No, that's just their philosophy.
Like a misgiving. Like a misgiving.
Yes. It's misgiving, it's what they are. At the end, the words spirit and love will be cast far away from every book. Then the people will gradually become free to be carried away by the waves of materialism. Then the idea of free will will be bound and imprisoned. And the truth that all activities are determined by material laws will be proved beyond any doubt. When many people begin to speak in this illogical way, human nature, seeing that it is about to fall into degradation, turned and began to walk in the path of a different philosophy. This new philosophy will bring no bad results. Why not? Because it will destroy materialism. Making this promise, logic gave birth to skepticism, the philosophy of doubts. Did anyone notice, kind of in the background, the theme of 1984? Yeah, you know, it's just so. And this is being written 100 years before that was written. So it's just, this is how the philosophies work. They just move through these cycles. Skepticism threw the rubbish of materialism far away. However, it has also created another obstacle to stop belief in God. It made people doubt, right? Because one is that you're just grossly into materialism, but no, that's not the thing, because whatever is there today and whatever you say, that'll change. So then you get more into the mental state, you know, the jnana. But at the same time is then, as the materialism wouldn't allow you to think about God because it's just about the material aspects. Mm-hmm. And there isn't anything beyond that. Here it's that there's nothing beyond doubt.
Yes.
Right? So just mental speculation. So just as there's nothing beyond the material, and therefore the senses are made material, so enjoying the senses, that's all there is. So all there is doubt, so therefore then applying that in mental speculation, that's all there is.
Yes.
So, yeah.
But not without bhakti, there is only karma and jnana.
Yes, that's all there is. Means in Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out you have all this variety of application of karma and jnana.
Yes,
you know, as one kind of morphs into the other, and this, and like you see with the Buddhism, there's two extremes, and then there's one in the middle that actually comprises two schools.
Yes,
like that. So you just have this range.
Yes.
Right, you know, one end there's one God, the other end there's no God. And in between then there's many gods or demigods or, you know, pantheism, you know, everybody's God. You know, it's just everything's all in between.
We have the choice.
Yeah, a buffet of what do you call it?
Of
bogus ideas.
Even for this materialism, Bhaktivinoda Thakur very beautifully explains that it is selfish materialism is one category and unselfish materialism is another category. So then that is being explained.
Yes. Okay. So it made people doubt. I do not have the power to see things as they really are. I only see some aspects of things. Where's the proof that I see things correctly? Right? Because that can always change. With my senses, I perceive only certain aspects of things. With my eyes, I perceive form. With my ears, sound. With my nose, smell. With my skin, touch. And with my tongue, taste. Through these five doors of knowledge, I learn about the qualities of things. If I had more than five senses, if I had perhaps 10 senses, I could learn other different things about the objects I perceive. In this way, I have garnered a little bit of knowledge with my senses. But it is knowledge riddled with doubts. Right? So then you can't get any absolute there. The others are just saying the absolute has to be based on the material. The transformation of the material, that's it. That's all there is. There can't be anything beyond. So there's no soul, there's no God, there's no like that. It's just the soul. They don't even really accept the mind. Right? And then these ones, then it's shifted all to the mind. You know, so in other words, it's the hard sciences against the soft sciences. Right, basically. At the end, skepticism refutes itself. There is a genuine truth to be understood, then from what root does this philosophy of doubts grow? Right? Why would it be there? Because if you're saying, well, I would know more and I don't know everything, but how do you know you don't know everything? Where does the idea come from that there's more than the five senses?
Doubt.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Yeah, doubt. How do you know that you don't already have beyond? There's not actually four, but then you have one that's beyond. How do you know everybody has? Right?
Maharaj, we have skipped three statements. We have skipped three statements.
We have skipped three statements.
In this way, even though it is destroyed.
This way.
Okay. In this way, even though it destroyed the philosophy of materialism, skepticism did not help the cause of true spiritual philosophy. Skepticism does not doubt the material world's existence. It merely says, I do not have complete knowledge of things, and there is no way I will ever have complete knowledge. Therefore, I will never understand things as they really are. So even if you want to give a conclusion, they'll say, no, you can't have one. So then it just leaves them in the realm of speculation, right? So these people, they're very attached to their speculation. And they can't have that someone else is right and they're wrong, so therefore no one's right. Yes.
So it sounds like it's purely based on pratyaksha.
It's purely based on pratyaksha, but even that, you can't actually have true pratyaksha. So you can't actually know what things are. So you just leave it in a state of anuman, where they just speculate about it. They say the material world's there, but we can never really know it. So then you can't actually, then there's no need to try to come up with, you know, what's the creation, what's the origin, what's the purpose of life, because with time then it'll be someone else to come up with something else. So if that's the case, why do they even bother? Since they say material world's real, then, you know, they should become hedonists and try to just enjoy what they have, because nothing is real anyway. You know, so what is it, Descartes? Then he was right. Right? You know, but they can't do that, because the whole thing is they've defeated materialism. Right? So then that's the problem, is there's a doubt in something, then the cure is worse than the disease. You know, it's like you have a boil, right? That's a problem. Now, what's the cure? You have to drink a glass of, what do you call it? You know, neem leaf juice or something, you know. The boil's better. So that's the whole promise. On the material platform, anytime you try to solve anything materially, it'll always be worse than... It's just different. So you say, no, it's getting better. But is it? Like, I had a funny thing. A couple of days ago, I was talking to some of the boys. And they were saying, oh, what time are you going to Calcutta? They said the time, and said, you know, okay, so then what are you doing? Oh, we're picking up something, you know, from the Maha shop, and then like that. So I said, oh, so you eat it there. And then I asked them the next day, so you ate and then you left. No, we took it with us. And he says, then where did you eat it? We ate it on the train. You know, with all those, you know, packed in there with a million people. He says, but if you do that, people will be seeing you, you get envious and this and that. He says, no, not at all. No one sees anybody. He says, they're all packed in, they're all looking at their smartphones, they don't even notice you're there or care. And I was saying, wow, okay. And so somehow or another, say technology has improved, but now there's no relations. At least if you got on the Krishnagar train before, you knew you had a solid 2 hours of conversation to keep you busy. You wonder, what am I going to do for 2 hours? And, you know. That. But now it's just, no, there's no relationships. No one even notices. So I was shocked, you know, because that's...
Maharaj, it's only the old guys who don't know how to operate the phone. We are, beside them, they are the most happiest people.
Yeah, because then they'll talk. Yeah. Okay, now they're nice, right? Before they were just harassed. Now they're nice. So I guess in that way it's been improved. Now these old guys then get some spiritual benefit. Okay.
There's a word coined by one of the devotees for these old people. They don't know how to do material enjoyment. They don't know how to enjoy the...
They're too pious
to appreciate
the modern technology. Yeah, because it's not personal enough. Yeah, what do you call it? Yeah, and they don't have enough money to buy it, you know, Mac, you know, so. Because that's a little more personal. Okay. But if you're a bona fide nerd, then Android is the way to go. So, okay. At the end, skepticism refutes itself. If there is a genuine truth to be understood, then from what root does this philosophy of doubts grow? Right, because they're worried that, no, I can't know the absolute. But then where does this concept of an absolute come from, since they say there is no absolute? They absolutely say there is no absolute. So where's the concept of an absolute even come from?
From momentary impressions.
Unless they're Russians. Then they do have a concept of absolute. Yes. Yeah? No?
It's not a Russian brand.
Huh?
It's not a Russian brand.
Wow. So even they don't get an understanding of the absolute. So then...
That's it.
Then. Wow. What's the world coming to? With careful thinking, one will see that this philosophy of doubts is merely idle chatter. Do I exist or not? Who expresses that doubt? I do, therefore I exist. Yeah, so then? That's it. Conversation's over. Right?
Yes.
Tattva Vivek, do we have a chapter of that, or does it doesn't have chapters? Or?
It's no chapters. It's the sutras are going on one after the other.
So this is on a particular sutra?
Yeah, we read the sutra.
We read the Tattva Sutra.
Yes. And the translation is written. This is the commentary.
And we have a number for that sutra.
We do have a number. But
there's not enough space in those brackets to put the number. Okay. Then. Okay. Tattva Vivek, that's Tattva. Okay, that's what's talking on all the philosophies. Okay, that's it. Then Tattva Sutras, that's the one with 50 sutras? Okay, that's the Upanishadic version. Okay, and then Amnaya Sutras? No one knows.
I think it's like Tattva Sutra, but it's longer. It's more.
It gives more explanation.
It's the same like Tattva.
Okay, so then you could take it and put it into Tattva Sutra.
Yeah.
It means as purport.
Something in the same fashion as introducing bhakti, then next, and the different rasas and everything discusses towards the end. So it's like complete.
Oh, okay, so it takes it through just getting defeating the philosophy to take it through. Okay, that was there. Okay, so then Srimad Bhagavatam verse reference 7:15:58. Although one may consider the reflection of the sun from a mirror to be false, it has factual existence. Accordingly, to prove by speculative knowledge that there is no reality would be extremely difficult. Footnote 48. Srila Prabhupada explains that just as the sun reflection from a mirror is realistic and requires the presence of sunlight, similarly the material world is realistic and is a reflection of the spiritual world. One can come to this conclusion not by speculative knowledge, but by the acceptance of Vaishnava philosophy. So, quote, the impersonalists try to prove that the varieties of the vision of the inferior philosopher are false. The impersonalist philosophy, Vivartavad, generally cites the acceptance of a rope to be a snake as an example of this. According to this example, the varieties within our vision are false, just as a rope seen to be a snake is false. The Vaishnavas, however, say, however, that although the idea that the rope is a snake is false, the snake is not false. One has experience of a snake in reality, and therefore he knows that although the representation of the rope as a snake is false or illusory, there is a snake in reality. Similarly, this world, which is full of varieties, is not false. It is a reflection of the reality in the Vaikuntha world, the spiritual world. The reflection of the sun from a mirror is nothing but light within darkness. Thus, although it is not exactly sunlight, without the sunlight, the reflection would be impossible. Oh, maybe this is where it comes from. Reflection of light and darkness. So it's talking about the reflection. The material world, the spiritual world. Because it's talking about that the material nature.
The Chaturshloki.
Yeah, the Chaturshloki. Oh, okay. Thus, although it is not exactly sunlight, without the sunlight, the reflection would be impossible. Similarly, the varieties of this world would be impossible unless there were a real prototype in the spiritual world. The Mayavadi philosopher cannot understand this, but a real philosopher must be convinced that light is not possible at all without a background of sunlight. Thus, the jugglery of words used by the Mayavadi philosopher to prove that this material world is false may amaze inexperienced children, but a man with full knowledge knows perfectly well that there cannot be any existence without Krishna. Therefore, a Vaishnava insists on the platform of somehow or other accepting Krishna. Tasmat kenap upayena mana Krishne nive shayet. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.132. When we raise our unmixed faith to the lotus feet of Krishna, everything is revealed. Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita 7.1, Maya sakta mana partha yogam yunja marashraya. Asham shayam samagram mam yata gyas yasi tach trinu. Now hear, O son of Prita, Arjuna, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Simply by raising one's staunch faith in Krishna and his instructions, one can understand reality without a doubt. Asham shayam samagram mam. One can understand how Krishna's material and spiritual energies are working, and how he is present everywhere, although everything is not him. This philosophy of Achinta Bheda Bheda, inconceivable oneness and difference, is the perfect philosophy enunciated by the Vaishnavas. Everything is an emanation from Krishna, but it is not that everything must therefore be worshipped. Speculative knowledge cannot give us reality as it is, but will continue to be nefariously imperfect. So-called scientists try to prove that there is no God and that everything is happening because of the laws of nature. But this is imperfect knowledge because nothing can work unless directed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita 9.10 by the Lord himself. Mayad yakshena prakriti suyate sachara charam. Hetu nanena konteya jagat vipar vi vartate. This material nature is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, and is producing all moving and not unmoving beings. By its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya gives this note. Durga tatvad artatvena parameshvarenaiva kalpitam. The background of everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. Vasudeva sarvam iti samahatma sudurlabha. Bhagavad Gita 7.9. This can be understood by a Mahatma who is perfect in knowledge. Such a Mahatma is rarely seen. Because people are attached to the material concept and their material identity, therefore then one cannot understand what's beyond materialism. Right? So only when we appreciate devotional service, then we take that process up, then it can be revealed, and then we're fixed in Krishna. Because we understand things can't happen without consciousness. But if everything's coming from Krishna, that means everything's coming from consciousness. And so, this idea that the modes of nature, or the material nature, or the laws of nature will make things, or things will just happen, or created from the void, or whatever it is, none of this can happen, because it has to come from consciousness. Right? And that consciousness can't mean the living entity, because they're not the supreme consciousness. So they are only conscious what's within their purview. But the complete thing, that the Lord is conscious of. So then one becomes fixed in, you can't have these other philosophies. It's not a matter of argumentation and logic, it's a matter of they just don't work. Because we don't have any, there is no experience of something being cognizant without consciousness. Right? Without a living entity. Right? It means we're conscious because there's a living entity. If there's no living entity, there's no consciousness. Right? Synopsis of Jain doctrine. Now Jain doctrine is refuted. They say there are two types of objects, padarthas. Okay, well that's, the other ones had seven, so they only have two.
This is not connected to the previous one, that's different. This Madhyamikas. They're not Jain.
No. They're Buddhists. Jain is another.
So that's something that we will do in Adhikarna next.
Yes, that'll be the next Adhikarna. Mm-hmm. So it's just that you just needed that one because if there's nothing, then they can't prove that there's nothing. So then there's no philosophy. Right? So one sutra was enough. Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, the other ones you see are more substantial because then you may have chapters about them. But this one, that's it. They say there's two types of objects, padarthas, jiva and non-jiva. The jivas are conscious, the size of the body, and with limbs. Okay.
Size of the body means with body.
whichever body, anybody, whatever size that anybody is. So in other words, the jiva must grow, because when you're a baby, it's that size, and as you get bigger, it's growing. So elephant's a bigger jiva. The mosquito is a very small one. Yeah, we're not saying any of this makes sense. We're just saying this is what it is. Non-jivas are five types. Dharma, adharma, the body, time, and akash.
Which body? You just said the body.
Anybody.
Oh, that was the size, and this is the body. The size is conscious?
So the jivas are conscious, and they're the size of the body. Whatever the body is. Because you're conscious of what's up to the limit of your body, but not what's beyond it. But the body itself is non-jiva. So dharma, adharma, the body, time, and akash. Okay. Yeah, who picks these ones, like, right?
Akash, what akash is the sky?
Sky, yeah, just that nothing kind of, yeah, space. Akash always figures in all these philosophies. Right?
Their beings are very well known for their astrology. Too much into Akash.
So all that happens in the Akash. Okay. Yeah, and their architecture.
That's why the size. The size is important.
The size, yes. Dharma causes motion. Adharma causes lack of motion. Both are all pervading. The body, pudgala, has color, smell, taste, and touch. Okay, so that's from sight. Okay. The body is of two types, atoms and their combinations. What does that mean? It means there's two types of body, atomic bodies and then combined bodies, or it just means in the body you have atoms and then the combinations. The combinations are air, fire, water, earth, bodies, and planets. Okay. Oh, these. Okay. These seven things which should be understood so that the jiva can attain liberation. Jiva, ajiva, ashrava, samvara, nirjara, bandha, and moksha. Among them, jiva was previously described. It has qualities such as knowledge. Ajiva are objects of jiva's enjoyment. Ashrava are the collection of senses by which the jiva flows, ashravati, to sense objects. Samvara, you can see more of a head space here. Right? They're flowing to the head. Samvara is lack of discrimination and other qualities which cover samvrinoti, discrimination. Nirjara is penance, such as plucking bodily hairs or sitting on hot stones, by which lust and anger, etc., are finally worn away, jiryati. Bandha is the continuous cycle of birth and death, influenced by eight types of actions. There are four gati karmas, which are sinful, those obstructing natural knowledge, wisdom, seeing, strength, and happiness. There are four agati karmas. Okay. These are pious acts which create happiness, body, status, and longevity from manusami, consisting of piety, which creates identity with the body, and consequent experience of happiness, distress, attachment to body, and detachment from body. Liberation is jiva being situated in aloka akash, beyond the worlds or going upwards. So then the non-world means the space where there aren't anything. So again, you see, it goes back to void. That's why they come here.
Sounds like aloka varsha. like beyond Loka Mountain, a Loka Russia.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like that, yeah. Stuck looking for your gold Rolex watch, which you can't find because it's all gold. Right? Liberation is Jiva being situated in Aloka Akash, beyond the worlds or going upwards after being freed from the eight actions, by methods indicated in the Jain scriptures, and manifesting his natural form as Atma. Their practice is called Three Jewels, and comprises correct knowledge, correct vision, and correct conduct. They establish the Padarthas by the logic of sevenfold refutation, called as Syadvad, which consists of seven propositions. 1. Somehow it may be. 2. Somehow it may not be. 3. Somehow it may be or may be. Somehow it may be or may not be. Right? Somehow it is beyond words. Somehow it may be, but is not. But somehow it may be, but is beyond words. Right? It's just beyond words, or it may also be, but it's still beyond words. 6. Somehow it may not be, but is beyond words. 7. Somehow it may be and may not be, but it is beyond words. Right? So it either it is there, or it may not be there, or it may or may not be there. Right?
Yes.
And so it can be beyond words. It can be, but beyond words. It may not be beyond words, and it may or may not be and be beyond words. Yes.
They're very good mathematicians because all the permutations have come here.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, the person who got into this was the mathematician. I had nothing better to do, right? Okay. Yeah, this is what happens if you leave mathematicians alone, then they come up with these kind of philosophies.
Does James consider to be skeptics then? Part of this philosophy? Are they Buddhist or Mayavadist? Who are they?
They're just, you could say, after. Like, it means that there's still their voidus in that. Just that they may use Akash, while the others use nothing, and the Mayavadis use Brahman. They're all the same kind of thing, just they have their... But yeah, there's the kind of doubts that you could say. It has that aspect of doubts. So it's all these things are...
A lot of doubts.
Yes, yes. Maybe, maybe not. Syat is an indeclinable meaning, somehow or somewhat. Saptabhangi means a system to refute seven rules. These seven rules concerning padarthas in various other philosophies. 1. Existence. 2. Non-existence. 3. Existence and non-existence. 4. Something different from existence and non-existence.
That's
so that's just it's just speculating, that's all. Although something exists, it is different from it. Right? It exists, but it's different from that.
And non-existence also different from this.
Although say it's different, and 6, though there is non-existent, is different from that, from it. 7, while there is existence and non-existence, it is different from it. You know, both together. The seven principles are used to refute these seven theories. You know, whether it is or not, but then you have, so they have these seven theories of whether it is or not,
yes.
These doubts, and then they have seven methods to defeat those. And so you end up with just pure speculation.
They want to support their theory of pluralism, basically.
Pluralism.
Pluralism, that's what they say.
Which is plural?
Plural means the same thing what they're saying. This or that, you know. So they're not...
So they didn't quite make it to a Chintaveda-Veda Tattva.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Trying to.
Yeah. Almost, but not quite. They are necessary. Okay, these seven principles are used to refute these seven theories. They are necessary because of qualities of existence, non-existence, eternality, non-eternality, difference and non-difference amongst all objects. If an object exists absolutely, it will exist everywhere at all times, completely, and no one will desire or reject it at any place, any time, or in any way, since one does not strive to attain what is already attained, since it is possible to reject or avoid it. Yes.
good it's not our
thing. Yeah, I can see. If an object does not exist absolutely, however, but exists sometime, somewhere, somehow, right, that's with rainbows or not or something, yeah, then someone, by some means, will try to attain or avoid it, since it is capable of being achieved or avoided.
It's pretty obvious, no?
Yeah, but remember what Bhaktivinoda Thakura mentioned before, I think, or Srila Prabhupada, well, quoting from Bhaktivinoda Thakura, is that the Jain philosophy, that was taken up by the mercantile class, the Vaishyas. So you can see here is, you only want to gain something that's hard to get. If it's something that everybody has, everyone's there, then Vaishya doesn't want that. You want something that's not to attain. So therefore, their whole philosophy, of course, it makes sense to them. Everybody else is like, but for Kshatriyas, it wouldn't make sense because they like absolute, rules. That's interesting. Okay, so enter. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Govardhana.